The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The theme of the December issue of Our State Magazine is entitled, in a rather tongue-in-cheek manner, Christmas Carol Ina. It features 12 articles inspired by familiar Christmas carols. The cover photo shows a picture of a vintage drum emblematic of the song The Little Drummer Boy. But first up is the welcome message entitled Wish List by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson. We've arrived once again at the season of lists, ever growing, ever expanding. Lists of all the meals we'll cook, the movies we'll watch, the cookies we'll bake, the cards we'll send. We make our grocery lists, our wish lists, our prayer lists. At Our State, between the cheerful chaos of our office luncheon and the final checklist of stories that round out the year, there's another list that finds its way to us, arriving as quietly as it has for decades. Our tradition began 25 years ago, first with the Children's Home Society in Greensboro, and continues now through the Department of Social Services. Each December, we receive a list of names, children, often siblings, and beside each one, a wish. A girl who wants art supplies, a boy who needs a warm coat, a teenager who doesn't ask for much. We never meet these children. We don't know their faces or their voices or the rooms they'll wake up in on Christmas morning. But we know enough. The little boy who asks for basketball pants and a pair of Nikes. The little girl who dreams of Junie B. Jones books and an American Girl doll. The teenager who hopes for a hoodie or a set of headphones. A few who ask only for a gift card and the chance to choose something of their own. In the early years, we did the shopping ourselves, standing in toy aisles under the fluorescent lights, filling carts with dolls and footballs, makeup kits and Lego sets, easy bake ovens and model cars. Back at the office, we stacked everything beneath a small tree, its colored bulbs blinking over a mountain of toys. Puzzles and picture books, Hot Wheels lined up in rows, bicycles with bright red bows. There were scooters and skateboards, board games and teddy bears. One year there was a drum set, a terrarium kit, a beginner's microscope, tiny dress clothes, boy size 6, girl 2T. Over time, the giving changed shape. Shopping gave way to donations, but the spirit, that quiet miracle of giving, never left us. The joy still comes. Last year, our staff gave enough to fulfill the wish lists for several brothers and sisters and still leave a little extra, gift cards for the children no one else claimed. It may seem a small thing in the great wide world, but to us, it feels enormous. On Christmas morning, before the meals with family and the calls with friends, I'll think of the little girl hugging a doll with soft brown curls, of the little boy lacing up his new sneakers. I hope they'll know they were remembered. And this year, when the lists grow long, when the days fill with errands and reminders and plans, I'll whisper my own list for the season. Gratitude for what we've been given. Kindness that carries from one heart to another. And generosity that once begun grows wider and wider until it fills the world. And now I will take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay entitled Toyland, Toyland, featuring North Carolina toy makers. In busy workshops and bright stores, our state's toy makers and purveyors keep wonder alive. Dolls, trains, and games remind us the joy of play never grows old. What's under our tree? Lola the llama and Ollie the otter from Dunlap Love in Charlotte, as well as vintage-inspired finds from O.P. Taylor's in Brevard. And the pictures in the background, sort of blurred out, is you see the lights of a Christmas tree. And then in the foreground, you have the stuffed animals. You have a metal yo-yo. Looks like a butterfly yo-yo, for those who know what I mean from the 70s. A box of Jacks and a ball. And two vintage miniature cars, a baseball. First up is Greensboro's Isles of Imagination. For 48 years, family-owned Toys and Company has been a go-to for Guilford County families. Generations of Holcombs have packed the store with walls of stuffed animals, towers of Lego sets, stacks of art kits, and plenty of joy to gift and get. And we have these plushies at Toys & Co. in Greensboro. There's several different iterations of trees that are plushies, all with stars on top or a bow on top, and they just look snuggable and huggable. And then there's even like little presents, little gifts that have a smiley face on them and a little teddy bear. And the opposite picture is of floor-to-ceiling shelves just full of stuffed animals. And some that are as tall as their young purchasers, young customers, a tall giraffe and such. For more information about the company, check out toysandco.com. And that and is spelled out, toysandco.com. Next is Winston-Salem's Timeless Tracks. Owner Jeff Consul flips the switch, and the Polar Express and a Cheerwine freight train start to whir around a loop, puffing smoke into his shop. Surrounded by shelves of O-gauge model trains, the Train Loft's Christmas Village in miniature has all the bells and whistles, of a tradition carefully kept. Twinkle lights and reindeer add seasonal cheer at this 31-year-old Twin City institution. And they have a picture of the owner in front of the train set with a, looks like a trestle, that he's actually right in front of a trestle, right behind a trestle. And there's a picture of the train in the front with some flatbed cars with Christmas trees on them. And in the left side of the picture is just some reindeer, so you can imagine that Santa in his sleigh with the reindeer pulling it. For more information about the store, it's trainloft.com, TRAINLOF, like Frank, T, like Tom, .com, trainloft.com. Next is Charlotte's Playful Plushies. For Kaylin Van Camp, a love of whimsical stuffed animals began when she crafted them for her firstborn in 2007. Years later, her daughter was her first employee at Dunlap Love. The company's clever characters each come with a sweet story, plus an upcycled outfit bound to bring smiles. Kaylin Van Camp, a mother of five, says each Dunlap Love character's story encourages emotional health and connection and loads of cheer. And most all of the animals have long legs, long spindly legs, and there's a giraffe and an elephant and a hippopotamus and a flamingo. And they don't typically look exactly like the animal like we've seen in a lot of stuffed animals, but they're a little bit squared off, but very huggable and very colorful. And for more information on that shop, it's dunlaplove.com, dunlaplove.com. Next up is the Triangle's North Pole. In 37 years, the Triangle Woodworkers Association has donated just over 80,000 handcrafted toys to the Marines' Toys for Tots program. Joe Sabo, TWA's committee chairman, meets with his team year-round to saw and sand airplanes, puzzles, tanks, and more, ensuring there are gifts to go all around. The Triangle Woodworkers Association hosts frequent workshops and is always looking for helping hands. And it looks like Joe is pictured actually in the midst of making some or sanding some wood that will become a toy. And in the foreground, there are pictures of these lovingly sanded cars and looks like even a race car in the background that might be painted as well, but smoothly sanded and more chunky type of things. For information about this organization, check out trianglewoodworkers.com. Next, we'll travel west to Brevard for Brevard's Floors of Fun. When John Taylor bought his storefront on Brevard's South Main Street in 1987, he intended to be a landlord. The young, and young at heart, are grateful he opened a toy shop instead. Today, hands-on fun abounds in every nook of the 6,000-square-foot O.P. Taylor's, which has added to other locations as well. The idea of O.P. Taylor's is to sell toys that require imagination, says owner John Taylor, who mostly stocks non-electronic playthings. And we have, and there's this store is chock full of stores, and there's a young man who is looking at some of the things that he might want to purchase or put on his wish list. And there's a big mural of Thomas the Tank Engine near the ceiling. For more information about this location, about this store, check out O.P., like Paul, optaylors.com. That's O.P., like Paul, Taylors, that's TAYLORS.com, optaylors.com. Next is Spencer's Ode to Delights. Meticulously handcrafted dollhouses and thousands of vintage amusements fill the North Carolina Museum of Dolls, Toys, and Miniatures. With a collection that includes the first style of Cabbage Patch doll, a rare Shenhut Humpty Dumpty Circus, and a sprawling model train, the nonprofit museum is an homage to joyful childhood artifacts. The museum has a 7-foot dollhouse made by Mary March, as well as the collectible Miss Revlon, Shirley Temple, Little Miss Revlon, Maggie Bessie, and other composition dolls. And this one is quite interesting. That it gives 2 floors of a dollhouse in the photograph accompanying this little article. And there's a window with a curtain and a replica of a fine chest of drawer, or dresser rather, I should say. And then toys on the floor, a twin bed that looks like, if you're familiar with the old trestle style bed. And then looks like a chaise lounge as well. And then in below that is the kitchen with an ice box. And there's an island in the middle of the kitchen, what looks like a tiny rolling pin and tiny miniature foods in process of being, or baked goods in process. And then there's a little kitchen nook, and hanging from the baker's rack is there are some copper pots hanging from that that are nice and shiny and new looking, and a little miniature broom on the other side. Tables and chairs, a little miniature toaster, and little miniature glasses and plates and such on that. It's very, very attractive. For more information about the museum, it's ncmdtm.org. I'll spell that phonetically. November, Charlie, Mama, Delta, Tango, Mike.org.com. Moving to Mount Airy. Mount Airy's Tiny Titans. At 16, Gail Hull Hyatt started working at her father's tractor dealership in Mount Airy, a business he'd opened in 1956. She noticed that customers often asked about miniature versions of the tractors they loved, and soon their questions sparked an idea. Hyatt has run Mount Airy Tractor Toyland for 25 years now, and she still enjoys uniting folks with their small-scale farmyard favorites. And they have a picture of Santa with a young wish, a young kid on his lap with his wish list for Christmas. And then they have around the edges, it looks like they have a display of some of these miniature and maybe not so miniature or small form factor of the different types of tractors on display as sort of like a museum display. They're in Mount Airy, and they have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/MT Airy. So M like Michael, T like Tango, A-I-R-Y, Tractor Toyland, Inc. is their Facebook page. So facebook.com/MT Airy, Tractor Toyland, Inc. All right. Next up is moving even further west to Tryon and Tryon's Century of Craft. Celebrate 110 years of Tryon toy makers, the artisans whose handcrafted wooden creations became cherished collectibles. Founders Eleanor Vance and Charlotte Yale taught Tryon locals the art of toy making, earning admiration far and wide for their toys' charm and design. Original and replica Tryon toy maker crafts are on view and for sale in Tryon. There's a picture here of young workers from 1917 who were trained to carve and paint toys and figurines. And one of the popular sets was the Mountain Home Group with a family, animals, and a cabin. And that is pictured here. And these are 2D, not 3D. But there's a little girl holding a cat and looks like the father holding a shotgun. And there's a chicken, a couple of chickens, a rooster and a chicken and a duck. And then mom in her overalls holding a chicken with a yellow sun hat on and the cabin behind them. And then there's a little merry-go-round type of thing with a type of toy that would spin around in a circle with different animals. Again, 2D, not 3D animals. And back in, meanwhile, in Tryon, there's Triangle's Tall Tale. The Tryon Horse, a big hit for the Tryon toy makers, premiered in the December 1917 issue of St. Nicholas magazine. As the horse's design evolved, so did its popularity. Beginning in 1928, its larger-than-life appearance in the Tryon Horse Show Parade solidified its status as a mascot not only for the toy makers, but also for the town. Today, the company's work is found on South Trade Street in downtown Tryon. And they have a vintage picture of the horse, and it still looks pretty much the same today as it did back then. It's just got a couple of fresh coats of paint on it. And it says, standing proudly in Tryon, Morris, the horse, is bedecked each Christmas season in a horse collar wreath. And that's what the picture shows. And he's next to an old school sleigh. He's decked out in a red saddle and red bridle and black and white spots and a black tail and black mane. And they're also in the facing page. There are some, ornaments, Christmas ornaments that you would hang on the tree of Morris. For more information about the Tryon Toy Makers, look up their website at tryontoymakers.org. And moving on to Boone's Nostalgic Finds. Inside Mass General Store in the High Country, twinkling lights cast a warm glow on wooden displays filled with timeless treasures, sock monkeys, slinkies, rag dolls, and more. What began in Valley Crucis in the late 1800s now satisfies shoppers across our state's 6 locations, each filled with that original mountain charm. And their website is mastgeneralstore.com. And this little girl is holding, gripping tightly to a sock monkey and looking at the selection of toys, many of them from bygone eras and then others that are newer. And that wraps up our tour of toy makers in North Carolina. I'm sure there are many others, but the ones that they focused on this time. Okay, our first article in the North Carolina issue is the carol, O Come All Ye Faithful. At St. Martin's Episcopal Church, the season begins not with shopping or songs, but with the clang of chains and the rise of an iron wreath. On a late November Sunday, if you duck into St. Martin's Episcopal Church on 7th Street in Charlotte after the service, you can hear the holiday season begin. The scraping of a ladder, the rattle of chains, and a half dozen men calling out directions. This is the chorus to the raising of a wrought iron Advent wreath high above where clergy stand during services. St. Martin's Advent wreath is made in two sections, topped with a crown, and by some estimates it weighs 200 pounds altogether. It takes at least five people to hang it, one to steady the ladder, one to climb up and down with the pieces in the chain, and three or four more to supervise and remind the guy on the ladder how it all fits together. Usually a Boy Scout or two lurks around to watch and learn. It involves metal, chains, and ladders. What scout can resist that? Just a few minutes before, the altar was all organ flourishes, white robes, and priestly gestures. But on that particular Sunday, as soon as the service finishes and the congregation is safely outside, a group of men organize themselves and head down to the undercroft, the charming word for the spiderwebby basement under the church, to fetch the pieces of the Advent wreath. And the little caption here is, high above the pews at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Charlotte, a crown of iron and greenery awaits it for its first flame, the quiet beginning of Advent. And you can see in the picture the crown at the top with a cross. And at each, the crown is divided into four spheres, if you will, or four hemispheres, and then there's a cross at the intersection of each of those, and a cross at the very, very top. And then you have all the three purple candles, the one red candle, and in the center, the white candle. The Christmas frenzy is yet to come, but first, a quiet Sunday afternoon in a giant candle holder topped with a crown. When assembled, it will hold five tall candles, three blue and one pink, and the white one in the center, with that crown at the top and a scattering of crosses. The whole thing hangs by a chain attached to a sturdy wooden rafter. The entire production takes place near the end of November because Advent, the four-week season that culminates in Christmas, starts the next Sunday. The holiday greenery, the carol singing, and the Christmas frenzy are all yet to come. Children's Santa lists are still in their minds and in their hearts, but first, a quiet Sunday afternoon and a giant iron candle holder topped with a crown. Thanks to a rebellious youth, I didn't find the Episcopal Church until I was in my 30s, and I came to St. Martin's even later, well into my 50s. But on that Sunday in late November, I find myself looking forward to the rattle of chains and the scraping of the ladder. Every year, from the first Sunday of Advent to the final lighting of the candles, by then all that remains are melted stumps by the 12th night after Christmas, I sit in a pew every week and admire that iron wreath. The crown at the top is fitting for Charlotte, the Queen City, but truthfully it reminds me of the logo for Imperial Margarine, the ersatz butter of my youth, complete with trumpet flourish as an actor takes a big bite of margarine on toast and a big crown magically appears on his head. But even I, in my coldness of heart and wandering of mind, to quote the Common Book of Prayer, can't help but feel the glow in anticipation of what those Advent candles are ushering in. After services, when the church is quiet, I like to wander over and take a good look at that iron wreath. Viewed from below, the bottom section that holds the candles has graceful swirls that look like keys, one of those powerful symbols of faith. Keys mean authority, but they also mean access to heaven. I like knowing that the maker of our wreath worked that into his design. St. Martin's is an old church, at least by the standards of Charlotte, where 20 years is enough time for a building to be declared obsolete and reduced to rubble. Although it started in a small schoolhouse in 1887, construction on the current building didn't begin until 1912. We don't know exactly how old our Advent wreath is. Some say it's from the 1920s, others say the 1950s, and no one knows who donated it. Surprising in an Episcopal church where anything bigger than a dust bunny usually has a brass plate with someone's name on it. We do know who made it, though. Under the wheel, if you know exactly where to look, you can see the origin stamped into the iron. Dance Foundry, Rome, Georgia. The owner, Carl Dance, was an iron worker who was revered in Floyd County, Georgia, for his artistry. He opened his foundry in 1933 and kept it going until 1985, a month before he died. He was so admired in Rome that there's a historical marker to his memory, declaring him artist, foundryman, friend. Dance's creation gets better as the weeks go by and the candles are lit. The first Sunday starts with a blue candle to symbolize hope. The second week, we light another blue one for faith. The third week, Gaudete Sunday, is always time to light the pink candle. Gaudete is Latin for rejoice. Because of the Latin Mass, it starts, "Rejoice in the Lord always." It's halfway through December, and we're shifting from penitence to joy and anticipation. On the fourth Sunday, we return to the last blue candle for peace. Finally, on Christmas Eve, we light the white candle in the middle, the Christ candle, to symbolize the birth of Jesus. The tradition of Advent wreaths with candles goes back to Germany, the source of many Christmas symbols, including light-covered trees and Advent calendars with their 24 tiny doors. These wreaths used to be something people hung at home with their families. They didn't become a regular feature in churches until the 1950s. Different churches used different styles of wreaths. Smaller wreaths that are easy to reach are often lit by a different family every week. At St. Martin's, though, our wreath hangs so high in the air that the tallest teenage acolyte is usually assigned the job of balancing a long taper to light the candles. Sitting out in the pews, I usually hold my breath, waiting for the taper to tilt and fall. It never does. My favorite part of the wreath ritual usually happens one afternoon by December 23rd, during the greening of the church. Then, when a whole team, men and women this time, swoop in to fill the church with greenery and flowers. A brave soul last year, it was Father Josh Boren's oldest daughter, Ava, home from her sophomore year at college, climbs back up a ladder and fills the whorls of iron wreath with so many magnolia leaves and evergreen that the iron disappears. At the end of the service, when we pass out small candles and turn out the lights to sing Silent Night, our Advent wreath glows in the candlelight. We'll keep on lighting its candles every Sunday till January 6th until the last note of We Three Kings fades away, the ladder comes out, and the wreath is dismantled, and we'll be ready to do it all again next year. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. And they can be reached at 919-781-1973. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired and is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, give us a call at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.